Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we do a one-on-one with Corey DeAngelis, who's an expert in school choice and vouchers and charter schools. It's the most information you'll ever need on the subject. So if you want to share it with someone who may have a different opinion than you, I think they would be convinced after listening to Corey, who's foremost expert on the subject. And we'll do that right after this. First, there's LifeLock. Practice safe online holiday shopping. Only shop websites with URLs that start with HTTPS and have a locked padlock icon on the left of the URL. Don't overshare. No online retailer needs your social security number or date of birth. That's your personal information. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. These holidays, you can miss certain identity threats by just monitoring your credit alone and bank statements. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information is being used in their network, they'll send you an alert. Protect yourself with LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock can help you feel warm and protected this holiday season. Save up to 25% off your first year at LifeLock.com with promo code Adam. It's 25% off at LifeLock.com, promo code Adam. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Today, Adam sits down one-on-one with the director of school choice at Reason Foundation, Corey DeAngelis. Plus, we'll do a live Q&A courtesy of the Stereo app. And now, hard at work on a children's Christmas book about his dog called Phil E's Navidad. Adam Carolla.
Nice. Yeah, get it on. Got to get on a church video. I'm going to get on. And a little format change. Corey DeAngelis, PhD, one of the nation's leading authorities on school choice and homeschooling, is with us because, you know, I'm very passionate about this subject. Good to see you, Corey.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So a lot of people reached out to us because they heard me talking about it a lot. And they're like, well, this guy Corey knows more than anybody. So let's talk to him. And so here we are. And I'm so glad you joined us. You know, first things first, I don't have a dog in this fight. I think everyone, you know, I've heard, you know, I've said like, hey, we got to end the lockdown. And people go, oh, that's because you're rich. And it's like, no, it's not because I'm rich. Because I'm rich and I work, we should stay locked down. It doesn't affect me or my family. And this has nothing to do with me. I have two kids. They're in the ninth grade. They go to a very good school. And it's all free because I live in a nice neighborhood. So that there's no dog in the fight. I do not know anyone who lives in the inner city who's being affected by this. I'm simply trying to weigh the evidence.
Yeah, and school choice is similarly an equalizer because rich people already have school choice. They can already afford to live in the neighborhoods that tend to be residentially assigned to the best, quote unquote, traditional public schools. And they can already afford to pay out of pocket for private school tuition and fees and pay for the costs associated with home-based education. Funding students directly, this idea of school choice, allows for more equality, and that allows less advantaged families to take advantage of private school tuition and fees and to access home-based education as well. And I just like to remind everybody at the beginning of these kinds of conversations that that's how I define school choice. It's funding students instead of institutions, just like we do with so many other taxpayer-funded initiatives already, like Pell Grants and the GI Bill for higher education. That funding doesn't go to a residentially assigned government-run school, regardless of your choice. It goes to an individual student, and students can choose a public or private university of their choosing. We do the same thing with pre-K programs, where the funding goes to the family, and you can choose a public or private provider. Same thing with food stamps. We don't residentially assign low-income families to government-run grocery stores and tell them that they must use their food stamps at a particular institution. You can choose Walmart, Whole Foods, Trader Joe's. And I can keep going on and on with examples, sure. But we do this in so many other areas. Why don't we do it with K-12 education, too?
Because children are the future? Geez, I don't know. Well, I do know, obviously. You know, I know. Everyone who listens to me knows. Yeah, so I live in Los Angeles. Los Angeles is a probably unique in a way that I know people who live in nice neighborhoods who have nice public schools and their kids go to the nice public schools. Then there are the people who still live in nice neighborhoods, maybe like the Hollywood Hills or something like that, but the school nearest to them sucks, and so they won't let their kids go to those schools. So those people either buy a house in the nice neighborhood with the good school system and they move there, or they just send their kids to private school. That's how it works. And then there's a third strata, which is a big deal, which happened when my kids were going to grade school for a while, which is this whole scam where people use other people's addresses or get an apartment somewhere or do some version of that so they can get a mailing address in a decent system and a decent district. And then they can send their kids to those schools, which are then always overcrowded because it's not just the people that are living around there. It's the people that are falsifying their information.
I mean, this is one of the reasons why I don't really like to call traditional schools, quote unquote, public schools, because they're not public like a public park where everybody can access the particular institution. If you don't live in the right zip code, you're not going to be able to get into the best public school. So your zip code kind of determines your school, unlike it does with other publicly provided services. But these traditional public schools discriminate on the basis of zip code. They're more accurately described as government schools because they're government run, government funded, government regulated, government assigned. And they're not really public in any meaningful sense of the word. On the other hand, charter schools, you're not residentially assigned to them, and essentially they're usually open to anyone who wishes to attend them if there's enough spots available.
Well, what is the pushback? I mean, obviously the truthful pushback is Democrats are against this, which is so I find it so amusing that the Democrats are against choice. You know what I mean?
It shouldn't be like this. The first one of the first school choice programs in the United States in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program in 1990 is when it started. It was supported by a Democrat, Polly Williams. It really shouldn't be a partisan issue because school choice leads to more equity. It leads to more competition. It leads to more empowerment of individual families. But then you start to think about the power dynamic when it comes to the teachers' unions and the parties that the teachers' unions tend to donate to. If you look at the American Federation for Teachers, for example, the second largest teachers' union in the United States, 99.2 or 99, around that amount, 0.2 or 0.4% goes to Democratic candidates.
Right.
And so that might be why there's a disconnect between the theory as to why everybody should support it and then what we're seeing on the ground where particular parties are less likely to.
Yeah, well, I was saying to my producer earlier today, you know, we're living in a bizarre time, which is people take these subjects, policies like school choice or what have you, and then they reverse engineer them to turn them into something political, which is, I love competition. I don't want there to be a government taco. And I don't want there to be a government car because we all can imagine what that car and that taco would be like. All right. So I'm for competition because I believe in competition, it ups everyone's game. It's the tide that raises all boats. So I then say I'm for school choice, and I've always been for school choice. I'm for everything choice. And then at some point, it becomes clear that the Democrats are against school choice and they're in bed with the teachers' unions. And then people point at me and they go, oh, it's some Republican talking point. No, you got to that after I already announced what I'm for. So it's insane to politicize it or to graft on some politics to it when most people just arrive at that conclusion naturally and then find out later that it has something to do with politics.
Well, I like to point out the logical inconsistencies for people who support other programs that fund individuals directly, but then they don't support it when it comes to K through 12. For example, all these other things I listed, food stamps, Medicaid, Section 8 housing vouchers, pre-K programs, Pell Grants, and the GI Bill, all of those programs, the money goes to people and people have a choice in the matter. And you don't have to support those programs or be against those programs. But I think everybody can realize that if we're going to have that money taken from the taxpayer, it might as well go to people instead of directly to government institutions. And so what's interesting is a lot of people who support funding the student directly when it comes to pre-K and higher education don't support it in the in-between years from K through 12. And the only reason I can come up with is the difference in power structure at these different levels of education. When it comes to pre-K and higher education, the norm is we already have a high degree of choice. When it comes to K through 12, there's an entrenched special interest that profits off of getting your children's education dollars, regardless of how well they meet their needs. And in this year, regardless of whether they even open their doors for business.
Yeah, there's also something that's a little bit even more nefarious, which is the public schools want to dictate the curriculum. And they feel like that is going to be, especially out here in California, is this, you know, fakakta, super progressive, insane curriculum. And they want to control that. And if they feel like if they give it away, and I know it's insane, but I know some of the charter schools is like, all right, we'll let you have a charter school, but here's what you're allowed to say, which is insane. It's very, and by the way, all these assholes that are constantly talking about McCarthyism, doesn't that feel a little bit like McCarthyism? Like, okay, you can have your own school and you can pick your own school, but here's going to be the curriculum. You know, the United States was founded in 1619 when the first slave ship landed here. So there's also a part where it's, you know, not about freedom. It's not so much about, taking money away or the school teachers unions. But there's also this, to me, sort of scary Orwellian curriculum that they want to dictate as well.
Well, yeah, that's one of the other biggest arguments in favor of school choice, that you can have a school that you're residentially assigned to that looks good on paper, that has high test scores, but you could still have your child being subject to a certain type of political indoctrination, which no family should have to put up with that. You shouldn't have to fund that, and you shouldn't have to send your child to a school where you feel like they're being politically indoctrinated. And let's face it, the people who don't have an option to get out of that system right now are the people who are the least advantaged in society. The more advantaged can look at this scenario and say, okay, well, I'm going to pay for a private school out of pocket. The way to remedy that and to solve that inequity is to fund the student directly to allow other people to access private schools. And this is another reason why charter schools are somewhat kind of like a halfway point between traditional public schools and private schools, because charter schools on paper are still public, but they can be independently run. But they do tend to be highly regulated from the government, just not as much as the government-run schools.
They also talk out of both sides of their mouth, because they say, these inner city schools in Baltimore and parts all over the country are failing. They're failing the black kids. They're failing the brown kids. They're failing miserably. And then we go, okay, well, how about a choice? And they go, no, just going back to the school that they announced was failing, that they presided over for the last 50 years. So it's their school district. The fucking thing is failing. And you guys have the temerity to explain that it's failing constantly and then explain we're against any alternatives. Now, what they would say is we want more money.
Yep.
But I don't draw a straight line between more money and more education. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I can talk about that. And yes, this is what the other side calls for all the time, that you shouldn't be able to choose your school. We'll just throw more and more money into the system, do the same thing over and over again and expect different results. You know, the textbook definition of insanity, because in the United States, we've increased per pupil education expenditures after adjusting for inflation by 280% since 1960. Since 1980, that number's increased by about 100%. And since 1990, we've increased these expenditures per pupil in real terms by about 40%. So we throw more and more money into the system. Outcomes don't get any better. And when you look at where the money is going when they throw more money into the public school system, is it goes towards administrative bloat and staffing surges. It doesn't even go to higher teacher salaries most of the time. So when the teachers are kind of complaining about low salaries and they complain about, you know, having to pay for supplies out of pocket, I kind of feel a little bad for them, because when you look at the trends over time, the money's just going to administrators and support staff, not to the classroom. But that's a problem with the incentive structure in the public schools. It's not a problem with their competition. In fact, all five studies that I've seen on the topic that look at the effects of charter and private school competition on public school teacher salaries, all five of those studies find that the public schools actually start to pay the teachers more in response to that competition, because they start to scratch their head a little bit and start to realize, well, if I don't spend the money wisely on the teachers, well, we're going to lose more students and more funding. So like you said earlier, competition is a rising tide that lifts all boats. It helps families, but it also helps teachers too.
Yeah. And I've talked to, I once had Dr. Drew, I think we had... Barbara Boxer, I think she was interviewing, and he said, any questions for Barbara Boxer? And I said, yeah, well, let's talk about charter schools. Let's talk about school choice. What about it? And then she and her daughter both condescendingly said, oh, that's so 1990s, or it's so 10 years old, like a talking point, which, well, look, they're liars, or they're stupid, or they're stupid, or stupid and liars. I don't know what they are. They don't want to address it. Please make a cogent point about why you think public schools are better than private schools, or sorry, than charter schools, or school choice, or vouchers. But of course, in their super condescending way, they just dismiss you and shut you down.
Well, what's interesting is they do try to change the conversation to be all about funding when we've done that. In the U.S., on average, we spend over $15,000 per child per year. In D.C., where I live, they spend over $31,000 per child per year in the public school system. Meanwhile, the charter schools in the places that I've seen tend to get about 33% less than the traditional public schools, yet you have thousands and thousands of families on wait lists trying to get into charter schools despite having less funding on a per pupil basis. So if it's about money, why are so many families trying to escape the well-funded schools to the less well-funded schools? You see the same thing in the DC voucher program. The voucher kids only get about $10,000 per year, whereas the DC public schools get about triple that amount. And they get about the same or better outcomes in the private school sector.
So yeah. Well, there's a kind of a bottom line, which is, you know, people vote with their feet and their wallets. And it's like when we never stop talking about a systemically racist country and how we're so racist and we're oppressive and stuff. Okay, why is there a long line of brown and black people dying to get into this country, if in fact that's true? And if these charter schools are no good, then why is there a waiting list?
Yeah, and when we talk about systemic racism, you can kind of link that to the public school monopoly and having this residential assignment. If you kind of look at the maps in places like LA and throughout the country, the discriminatory redlining practices in the 1930s, those maps kind of mirror the district boundaries that we have today. And this is why we have such segregated traditional public schools. So if you want to allow families to get away from that system, the best way to do it is, again, school choice. And if you look at charter schools, which I think is what you were getting at, if you look at the national data from the National Center for Education Statistics, charter schools have higher proportions of lower income students and also higher proportions of minority students. In DC, for example, the voucher program out here, the average household income is about $27,000 per year. And the students, about 95% of the students using the program out here in DC are identified as Black or Hispanic.
So how does the alternative, we'll just call it schools, I don't mean alternative, but I just mean like, schools, we can use vouchers and charter schools and things like that. How do they stack up academically to their public school peers?
Yeah, the latest and most comprehensive meta-analysis on the evidence of charter schools was published in a book called School Choice at the Crossroads in 2019. It's a chapter by Julian Betts and Emily Tang, two California-based researchers, and they did a meta-analysis of about 40 different of the most rigorous studies on the topic, and they find that access to charter schools in the U.S. tends to produce about 2 to 3% of a standard deviation higher math and reading test scores, which is about 10 to 20 additional days of learning. So it's a pretty substantial positive impact. And if you look at the private school choice evidence, there are 17 gold standard evaluations based in the United States. The majority of those studies find that winning a lottery to use a private school voucher program leads to higher academic outcomes for students. And only two of the 17 find negative effects. But another thing I like to point out is not everything is measured by a standardized test as well. If you look at the evidence when it comes to academic attainment, like high school graduation and college graduation, the evidence tends to be much more positive in favor of school choice. If you look at things like crime reduction and teenage pregnancy reduction, it's much more favorable to school choice. If you look at things like civic engagement and tolerance of others, a lot of these non-academic outcomes tend to produce huge positive benefits for school choice recipients. And I'll just hit on one study from DC, since I talked about it earlier. The random assignment evaluation in DC, the most recent one in 2019, found that winning a lottery to attend a private school in DC was associated with no difference in math or reading test scores at a third of the cost, but then huge positive impacts on reports of safety, reports of satisfaction, and attendance.
So what's your take on schools being shut down? I'm in California. Everything's been shut down. Schools have been shut down. You know, there's study after study that says kids don't really get it. If they do, it doesn't really affect them. Also, they don't transmit it. Most of the teachers are under 50. They're not in a danger zone. What do you believe is behind shutting down the schools? And then what is the what's the effect of it?
There are three studies on the topic finding that places with stronger teachers' unions are significantly less likely to reopen their schools for in-person instruction. I did the first study on this a couple of months ago with MIT's Christos Makridis, and then two other studies replicated our results in other areas. This wasn't really surprising to us because this is what the unions have been calling for over and over again over the past couple of months, to keep the schools closed for in-person instruction. And it makes sense from a rational cost-benefit decision-making standpoint for them to call for this, right? Because they understand that they could not have to go to work for in-person instruction while still getting the same benefits in terms of job security and pay at the same time. So this is what we've seen who have been pushing for keeping the schools closed. And this is what the three studies on the topic find. And as you noted, the scientific evidence also suggests that the children aren't really spreading the virus. Dr. Fauci just said this a couple of days ago on an ABC News interview. Governor Cuomo has admitted this. De Blasio has admitted this. Data at a Brown University from the economist Emily Oster has been tracking that the children are less likely to have a case rate that mirrors the overall community, suggesting that schools aren't adding to the community transmission. So the science is saying that we shouldn't be closing the schools, and we probably have done a lot of harm to students for keeping the schools for such a long time.
Yeah, I agree. So what is the potential now with Biden coming in? Trump's Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, was all pro voucher and and charter schools and all that kind of stuff. And then I think Biden made a declaration that he was going to get rid of that when he got into office. I love when politicians go, you think we're damn right we're going to raise your taxes and we're going to get rid of charter schools. Oh, thank you, Your Highness. Well, that'll make for a utopia. That's going to be awesome. That'll help the young brown and black kids.
Absolutely not here in D.C. for the students who are using the D.C. voucher program. That's one of the biggest risks here because D.C. is a federal district. And so the federal government could, in theory, get rid of that program that is helping, over 1,000 students here in the district. But another thing on the school reopening debate, I just want to point out that with other industries, like if your grocery store doesn't reopen, it's not a whole national debate, right? You can just say, okay, well, I'm not going to shop at Walmart anymore because they're not open. I'm going to go to Trader Joe's or Whole Foods. I similarly argue that if your local school doesn't reopen, you should be able to take your children's education dollars elsewhere. Then it wouldn't be a whole an issue one way or the other. Should we open the schools or should we close the schools? But yeah, with Joe Biden coming in, there have been separate reports, one from Politico, another from Washington Post, about his ideas for the new education secretary. There have been three top names floated. One of them was Linda Darling Hammond, who was a professor emeritus at Stanford University. She already said, no, I'm not going to do it, even if you offer it to me. The other two are closely tied to the teachers unions, one being Randy Weingarten, the current president of the American Federation for Teachers, and then the other being Lily Eskelson Garcia, the former president of the National Education Association, which is the biggest teachers union and also the biggest labor union, period, in the United States. So it could be one of them, just based on these conversations that have been floated with the Biden administration. And they're calling for a lot of ridiculous things like defunding charter schools, like taking away all federal funding from charter schools if they're for-profit charter schools or if they are, they quote-unquote don't provide results. But at the same time, they said that if a traditional public school is failing, we just need to give them more money, whereas the charter schools were going to take all their money away. They said that in the same interview, Biden's national policy director. I'm glad the reporter actually pressed them on that. But yeah, Biden, as you said, has also been quoted to say, when I'm president, Betsy DeVos's whole notion from charter schools to this are gone. He also voted against the DC voucher program in 1997 when he was a senator. So it's not looking good for school choice under a Biden administration. But what I'm optimistic about is that only about 8 to 9% of education funding at the K-12 level, it comes from the federal government. So he could do a lot of damage to charter schools by making a lot of individual charter schools close, go out of business from taking their federal funding. And he could get rid of the DC voucher program, which would be a problem. But as far as like private school voucher programs, most of the action that we see happening is at the state level. For example, in Ohio, they just passed a bill expanding their voucher program by 25%.
But remember, nobody loves the little black kids like Biden. Nobody loves that party loves the little black kids and the little brown kids. They love them when they can trot them out and use them to get votes. But then after that party's over, they're done. Where are we with homeschooling? Now, maybe you don't know much about homeschooling, and I don't know what you know about homeschooling, but it appears to me that with this whole COVID shutdown bullshit that we're doing with the schools, with the fucked up curriculum we're getting out of the schools with this voucher stuff, it feels like more and more people are going to opt into this homeschooling. And I think it may turn into a little cottage industry, in which case, if it does, the government's going to want to shut it down, and then we're going to have a Ruby Ridge type situation on our hands. But it appears to me that more families are thinking about that option, and then they're going to start involving more kids at one home, and it's not going to be an individual homeschooling thing, but it'll be like possibly a network of homeschools. What's your take on that?
Yep, that's what we're seeing already in the data. If you look at the latest Gallup survey, a nationally representative survey just a couple of months ago, they estimate that the public school system will see an exodus of about 3.5 million students. They estimated that there would be a 7 percentage point drop in the proportion of children in traditional public schools in the U.S., but they also asked about homeschooling, and they estimate that there will be a doubling of homeschooling. Before the pandemic, about 3% of the school-age population was homeschooling. So if you take their estimate, that would be about 6% of the school-age population homeschooling. And then also EdChoice has been doing nationally representative surveys every month since March, just asking, based on your experience with home-based education as a result of COVID-19, how do you feel about homeschooling now? Each survey every single month has found that families are now reporting that they're over twice as likely to say that they are now more favorable of homeschooling as opposed to saying that they're now less favorable of homeschooling. And if you look at individual states that have been reporting this data, we've seen just applications and filings for homeschooling just going through the roof. For example, the most recent data came out of Massachusetts. Their homeschool filings are up about 800% from the same time last year, and their private school filings have gone up about 80% from the same time last year. In Texas, homeschool filings have gone up by 280%, and we've seen similar numbers all across the country.
You know, it's interesting. I'm trying to make sense of this current climate we're in, and I've always had this thought, and I've expressed it to Dr. Drew quite a few times, and I've said it into this microphone, which is there's a sort of unintended circumstance to a lot of the actions that are going on right now. And it takes place in many different venues. So on one hand, I feel like CNN has shot themselves in the foot because they've just lost all credibility. I ask people around here just sort of informally, like, if you saw a story on CNN 5 years ago, what would you think? And they go, I think that was the story. And I said, what would you think now? And they'd go, I'd go look it up to see if I could find the rest of the story or the real story. They've fucked themselves up with their own credibility because they've been too fucking partisan and they haven't done their job as a news organization. I believe Twitter has given birth to Parler because they've been too tight-fisted and too partisan and too political with what they're letting on their platform. And I believe many politicians like Gavin Newsom and Garcetti, they've all shot themselves in the foot too. No one's going to listen to anything Gavin Newsom's considered a fucking clown. Now, he wasn't a clown before this. I mean, I knew he was a clown, but the populace didn't know. He's a joke now. No one's going to listen to him anymore. Most of these big city mayors and governors, they're jokes. Now, and CNN is a joke and Twitter's a joke and people, and if you don't believe me, I said 2 years ago, if you looked on iTunes top 100 podcasts, there was no conservative podcast on there, maybe Ben Shapiro. Now, 10 out of the top 20 are conservative. I said, yes, you will give birth to this other thing if you keep with your partisan bullshit. And you teachers' unions and governors and mayors, you shutting down all the school systems, that's great. Now there's a cottage industry. You're creating homeschooling now. You're going to lose a lot of your constituency because they're going to fucking stay home. You let them do an experiment. You said stay home and learn at home. You didn't have to. The schools could have been open the whole time, but you decreed they must stay home. So they stayed home and a lot of them are getting used to it. And it's the same thing that's taking place in business. You know, a lot of people are kind of realizing, I don't have to go into the office. I can just stay home, get my work done on my computer and my bathrobe, or go full Jeffrey Toobin. But either way, be careful what you ask for because you asswipes created this.
Yeah, the teachers unions in this sense overplayed their hands. They probably didn't think that families were actually going to take that next step and unenroll their children from the public school system. Now they're seeing that all of these families are leaving. And since schools are funded based on enrollment counts, they're losing millions and millions of dollars. And so I think they might be rethinking that in some places. And if you look at the latest survey from Real Clear Opinion Research, families are actually much more likely to support school choice initiatives now. And I think it's because they're seeing that these buildings aren't even opening and they're getting to keep their children's education dollars. Meanwhile, families are scrambling all across the country trying to figure out what to do. And none of that money's following them to the home-based education or to the private schools, which are more than happy to open their doors for in-person instruction. And this latest survey found a 10 percentage point jump in school choice support from April. From 67% to 77%. And I think it's because families are seeing that the public school system itself and the teachers unions just aren't going to be there for them this year. And it this comes in stark contrast with the private sector, right? With the private schools, they're fighting to reopen. They're actually fighting against governments to reopen. In Sacramento, for example, a private school rebranded itself as a daycare center a couple of months ago because there was a regulation saying that the private schools couldn't open, but the daycares could be open. And so they rebranded themselves to try to reopen for their customers. Meanwhile, public schools all across the nation have been fighting for the opposite. And I think the obvious difference is one of incentives. One of these sectors gets your money regardless of what they do for their customers.
Well, you know, tell me if you think this is a decent analogy. I'm old enough to remember when people didn't trust buying things online. You know, you'd go to the store if you needed a TV set or stereo or whatever. You'd go to the place. And people are like, I'm not going to give my information out. You know, I'm not going to give my credit card. You know, we don't trust it. We don't trust it. This is the way people do it. You go to the store. Well, obviously, that's completely out the window now. And there's a whole generation of people just grew up shopping online and they don't give it two thoughts. And I feel school always felt like, yeah, school's that place you go. It's got a fence around it. A bell rings every 55 minutes. You go to school. It's got a principal. It's got a cafeteria. That's where you go. And no one ever thought any other way. You know, they didn't think about charter schools. They didn't think about, certainly didn't think about homeschooling. But now as time moves on, just like online shopping, people are kind of getting comfortable with the notion now.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I think the one of the biggest increases this year has been these things called pandemic pods or micro schools, where families are banding together 5 to 10 children in a household to kind of economize on the process of homeschooling so they don't have to do it all themselves. And it's kind of like the getting back to this idea of the one room schoolhouse. And the way that I've tried to put it is just imagine if we did have the money following the child. Just imagine if we had $12,000 follow each child per year. You get 10 children together in a small micro school, that's about $120,000 in revenues. Even if only a fraction of that went to the teachers, they'd probably make a lot more doing it that way than in the traditional public school system. And they have a lot more autonomy, and the families and students would have more one-on-one instruction. So I think it'd be a win-win-win for everyone. And we've also seen these new apps that are coming out that are kind of like the Uber or Airbnb of education, where people are looking up educators using an app. One example is unschool.school, if anybody wants to go look that up. But I think that's also the future of education, where people can demand their educational services using an app.
I'm going to tease this question, and probably nobody more qualified than Corey to answer this. Named, by the way, to Forbes 30 under 30 this week is 30 under 30 most influential. What is it, 30 under 30, or is it just 30 under 30? They put a subtitle.
They just call it 30 under 30. And by the way, I'll be 30 in a few months, so if anybody's curious.
Well,
I
didn't make the cut when I was 29 and 7/8. And the book, School Choice Myths, Setting the Record Straight on Education Freedom. It's available now on Amazon. I'm going to tease this because I got to do a spot. And again, I'll put you on the spot because I don't know if this is your field of expertise. But it appears to me, as somebody who just observes humans, that education and the success of the schools, we always talk about the schools, the funding of the schools. Are you getting the best teachers? Are you getting the best administration? And blah, blah, blah. It seems to me way more important. The family seems to play a much more critical role than the school teachers. My kids go to a good school, but the school is just a school built in, 1967, slab walls, flat roof, bad linoleum tile everywhere, drinking fountain with the chewing gum stuffed into it. There's nothing about my kids' school structurally that would define it from any bad school or any better school. The teachers, I try not to interact with them too much because I talk a lot of shit on this podcast. But from what my kids report, not the best and the brightest. They don't seem to be a part of a, top gun of educators or elite. But the big difference are the parents. The families are intact. The parents are focused on education, and they create an environment where they keep after those kids. They're on those kids. They're not going to let them show up late. They're not going to let them not do their homework, so on and so forth. So the tease will be, and I don't know what the statistics are and if you have them in your head, but never stop talking about the school. Mm-hmm. Never stop talking about the teachers. But we rarely talk about the families, and I think that's something we should get into. I'll tease that right now. First, I'll tell you about Truff. It's sauce is an condiment. It's a main event, and not all hot sauces are created equal. Truff, that is T-R-U-F-F. And the F is for fantastic. This stuff is so good. We all use it here. It's a it's like a luxury top shelf hot sauce. Makes everything a five-star meal. Adding a signature blend of red chili, black truffle, organic agave, nectar, and savory spices. I use this stuff at home. We use it here. It's great on tacos. It's great on mac and cheese. It's great on eggs. It's like, it just wakes everything up, and it's so much better than just your standard hot sauce you'd get at a diner. Makes a great holiday gift idea, and you know people that are into food. Get them something that's going to take their food to the next level. Over 10,000 five-star reviews, a best-selling sauce on Amazon and Whole Foods nationwide. It's Truff, right, Dawson?
See for yourself why Truff is the biggest hot sauce on Instagram and TikTok. Get 10% off site-wide when you use promo code Adam at Truff.com. That's 10% off everything, including White Truff VIP Box and Truff Variety Pack, just in time for the holidays. Just shop at Truff.com. That's T-R-U-F-F. F is in fantastic.com, and use the promo code Adam.
All right, and let me hit the quick Geico here. Everyone's got, do you own, do you rent? You probably do one or the other. How about you bundle those policies at Geico? Make it easy to bundle your homeowners and renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing. You got enough to do. So go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could be saving at Geico, geico.com. All right, Corey, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we will answer the question that I teased out moments ago, right after this.
Christmas time is here. The halls are decked with boughs of holly, and we're ready to get drunk and fight with our families. Corolla Drinks is here to help. This Christmas, Adam and the gang want to make sure the holiday season stays merry despite this goddamn pandemic. That's why we're offering the Corolla COVID Christmas Combo, which includes a Corolla Christmas t-shirt featuring Adam as anti-masker Santa Claus, a bottle of your choice, and a 2021 calendar filled with pics of the entire ACS staff and signed by the entire ACS staff. The Corolla COVID Christmas Combo is available at CorollaDrinks.com for $49.99. Get it for yourself or the ACS fan in your life. Happy holidays from everyone at Corolla Drinks.
All right, back with Corey DeAngelis, Ph.D., and just made the cut for the 30 for 30, or 30 under 30. I was thinking about ESPN. 30 under 30 for Forbes this week. The book, School Choice Myths, Setting the Record Straight on Education Freedom. And that's available now on Amazon. So families, parents, we don't talk about it because we don't like to judge. But I love judging because it's the way you get shit done. And what do you know?
Yeah, families do make a big difference. So we shouldn't not talk about the effects of families. But that doesn't mean that schools don't make any difference at all. So, for example, this is why I like to cite the random assignment evaluations. For example, we know whether a particular medicine works or not because we randomly assigned the drug to the treatment group and we randomly assigned a placebo or a sugar pill to another group of people. And if you compare the average difference in the outcomes, you can be pretty confident that you're finding the effect of the drug. Similarly with charter schools, if you have more students that want to attend the charter schools than there are spots available, it goes to random lottery. So you have a experimental kind of setup, which is kind of like a medical trial when it comes to school choice. And those studies tend to find positive effects, particularly when we're looking at non-test score outcomes. For example, in Harlem Children's Zone, two researchers, Dobby and Fryer, did a random assignment evaluation and found that students who won the lottery to attend a high-quality charter school in Harlem's Children's Zone were a lot less likely to commit crimes. The male students were completely reduced their chance of committing a crime and eliminated it, actually. The winners of the lottery, 0% of them were incarcerated for a crime. And for female students, they experienced about a 59% reduction in teenage pregnancy. So since it's a random assignment evaluation, we can't say it's a difference in the family background characteristics or the background characteristics of the students. But that does that as well doesn't mean that families don't matter. So, I do think that when families have more feeling of empowerment when it comes to choosing their child's school, they become more involved with that process for their children. So it's not a silver bullet for sure, but it definitely can help. And there is some evidence suggesting that when families get the opportunity to choose a school, they start to do more research on their children's education.
Right. So according to what you're saying, it's a nice little sample because it's a lottery and they're randomly picked. So you can see how this group is doing versus that group randomly, whereas other things kind of pollute the test sometimes mm-hmm. because they go, well, if it's first come, first serve, well, then the more ambitious families would get their kids in first and they're already sort of pre-wired for more involvement in the kids. But it's also self-selecting group and that you're a parent or parents that thought enough about your child's education to even get your ticket dropped in that hat for the lottery. So, you know, you're already seeing people that are more involved by nature than, let's say, my parents would have been.
Yep, that's absolutely true. But the people who lost the lottery also applied for the charter school.
Right.
So they're similarly motivated. But you're right that we can't apply these results to the people who didn't even apply. But we can say we're pretty confident that it's a causal result.
Did they follow the kids that didn't make the lottery?
Yep. Yep, the ones who entered but then did not get into the charter school because they, by random chance, just lost the lottery.
They entered the lottery, and that's where the 59% pregnancy thing comes in versus the other group that didn't make it in. And then we have no arrests or incarcerations
for males.
Amongst the males. But what do we have amongst the males who didn't make it in?
4.4% were incarcerated in that study. It's a
2015
study published by Dobby and Fryer, I believe, in the Journal of Political Economy. It's one of the JPE
studies. It appears to me that this particular chapter in a young person's life, this point, you know, my feeling is kind of what you do from beginning to, I don't know, kindergarten or pre-K or whatever all this other nonsense is. I mean, my kids went through it. You sit in a circle and you lift a parachute with the help of a teacher and somehow this helps them. It helps some skill. There's some skill it's supposed to help. It's nonsense. It's a waste of time. And then college, once you go to college, you probably got your base under you. You know, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of like your bones, you know, like you're not quite done growing, but we're about there. If you were going to be 6'3", you would have been 6'3" by now. So this group, you know, first grade through senior in high school, that seems pretty important. And that seems like a real crossroads. It just seems like you could go this way or you could go that way during those periods of time. I've seen it enough with some of the people I grew up with. It'd be nice if the government thought a little more about this or had a little more of a sort of bipartisan, we're going to throw everything out the window. Let's just do what's best for the kids. Let's follow the science. The people that never stop talking about following the science, who selectively follow the science when it comes to their subjects. They follow the science when it comes to greenhouse gases. They don't follow the science when it comes to charter schools.
Yeah, you're correct there. And the problem here, as I noted earlier, is this difference in power dynamics when it comes to K-12 education. There's a group that profits from getting your children's education dollars, regardless of how well they meet families' needs. That's why you have certain people supporting, funding people directly when it comes to pre-K, higher education, restaurants through food grocery stores through food stamps, but then don't support it when it comes to funding students directly when it comes to K-12 education. They would like you to send all of that money to one particular institution. And I wanted to hit on one myth from the book, the School Choice Myth book, that everybody on this podcast has heard, which is that school choice defunds the public schools or siphons away money from the public schools. And I just want to say that that's absolutely ridiculous. School choice doesn't defund public schools. Public schools defund families. School choice initiatives just return that money to the hands of the rightful owners. You would similarly think it would be ridiculous for someone to say that allowing families to choose their grocery store defunds Safeway.
Right.
No one would say that because everybody understands the money doesn't belong to Safeway or Walmart.
Right. Right.
Or any other institution.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because the mindset of a lot of progressives when it comes to schools or taxes or anything is we own that money. It's like when you hear AOC talking about Amazon building a shipping hub in her neighborhood, she's like, she's like, why should we give them, you know, $6 billion? They're like, you didn't give them $6 billion. You gave them a incentive to build their hub there. You're not cutting them a check. It's their money.
Yeah, that's the main problem with the conversations in K through 12 education. It's this assumption that your children's education dollars belong to a particular institution, which we don't think about anything else that way.
No.
We don't even think about that with higher education. The Pell Grants go to the people, and you can choose private or public.
Well, also, I think we've all figured out that incentive is a huge deal and that people can act in a good way or they can act in a bad way or they can act in a lazy way, sort of dependent on incentive. And one of the examples, I sort of drew it up this way. I live in SoCal. There's car dealerships all over the place, and they're vying for your business, you know? And if the place is out in Simi Valley, they'll go, I know it's a drive, but we offer discounts and free hot dogs for the kids, you know? But what if there was a car dealership that was in your neighborhood, and the rule was you had to just shop at that car dealership? That's it. You can't go outside of that. That's your Ford dealership, and you must use them. So when you need a new car and you need servicing and you need anything, you just have to go the one that's closest to you randomly. Well, then what would be the incentive for that dealership to give out the free hot dogs and the discounts and the zero down and the $5,000 off of MSRP? How fast would all that shit go away?
They wouldn't have any incentive at all. They wouldn't have an incentive to even have the car working in regular condition because they would understand that if you were unhappy with it, well, they'd still get your money and you'd have to pay for another car from another private dealership. It's just
right.
That's the problem with K through 12 education.
Agreed. Can I ask you about LeBron James's school? I don't know much about it. I like the idea of it. It's also funny that when all these asswipes that are against school choice hear about Oprah opening a school or LeBron James opening a school, they go, oh, great. This is awesome. It's like, well, then are you for it? I mean, do you wish LeBron James opened more schools or Oprah opened more schools? I know Oprah's an Africa thing, but what is the LeBron James school? He's kind of the tip of the spear of the liberal living in SoCal. And if, in fact, it's a good thing, then shouldn't we praise him and try to replicate it?
Yeah, it's no different whether LeBron James starts a school or whether some other private entity starts a public charter school. It shouldn't matter who starts it. And I think, yeah, they should be logically consistent and support families having options, regardless of whether it's a celebrity starting the school or not. Because it works the same as any other charter school, right? And you can make the same arguments that LeBron school's siphoning away money from the traditional public school. But and you can make the similar argument when people are paying for private school out of pocket, that when someone pays for a private school out of pocket, the financial effect on the traditional public school is the exact same as if you were switching to a charter school.
That's a very good point, which is nobody ever blames anyone for sending their kids to private school. As a matter of fact, they get praise. And especially if it's a family that's a little close to the to the poverty line, when they scrimp and save and get their kid to a private school, they're heroes, essentially. But you're saying ostensibly it's the exact same thing. It's one more kid that's not in the school that's closest to them, and thus one less paycheck for the school system.
Yep, because they're funded based on enrollment counts. So the financial effect's the exact same. And it's actually even worse than that when it comes to public schools, because in places like California, it's largely funded based on enrollment counts. But I think it's only about, it's probably around 70% is based on student enrollment of the funding. So what that means mathematically is when a public school loses a student to a private school or to a charter school or to a voucher program, they get to keep a lot of the money for students they're no longer educating. Just imagine if Walmart got to keep 30% of your grocery bill each week, even after you started shopping at Trader Joe's or Whole Foods. Walmart would be happy about that deal. And I argue similarly, the public school should be happy they get to keep any money at all for students who are no longer there.
What is the LeBron James format? I'll let you noodle on that in a second. I don't know. I've looked into it a little bit. I don't know if it's what I don't know if you would typify it as a traditional charter school. And I'd be curious sort of what it was or how you would describe it, I guess. Let me hit Lids here. Need the perfect gift this season? Lids has some officially licensed sports gear or iconic brands like Nike, Adidas, Champion. Lids, North America's largest hat retailer. Visit any Lids store and associate will help you find the perfect cap for anyone on your holiday gift. Lids is a leader in headwear, including all the authentic MLB on-field caps, NFL sideline caps, and knits, plus a huge variety of fashion styles, colors, and Lids exclusives. You can visit lidsloyal.com/Adam. That's lidsloyal.com/Adam for 25% off your next in-store purchase. I just got my hat from Lids, my Los Angeles Rams hat, and I gave it to my son this morning. He was like, ooh, this is sweet. Perfect gift is waiting. Visit Lids, right, Dawson?
Visit lidsloyal.com/Adam for your 25% off coupon on your next in-store purchase.
So what do we need to know about LeBron's I Promise School in Akron?
Yeah, I just remembered LeBron James' I Promise School was actually not technically a public charter school. I think it's more accurately described as a magnet school. You'd have to check with me on that, but I don't think it's a public charter school. And this kind of gets kind of muddied in the definitions. A lot of people are like, well, what's the difference between a magnet school and a charter school? The difference is they're both public schools of choice. They're classified on paper as public schools, and you're not residentially assigned to them. But magnet schools are run by the government, whereas charter schools can be independently operated.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to a magnet school, for example, in San Antonio, Texas. It kind of got me interested in the idea of school choice and not having residential assignment, being able to choose your public school. Other than the ownership, it's not very different. And with a lot of magnet schools, they can have selective admissions. Like they can say that you have to have these types of grades to get in or different types of admissions criteria. Whereas charter schools in general, there are exceptions, but in general, public charter schools, although they're privately operated, are generally not allowed to have selective admissions. They have to accept all comers and then use random lottery when they don't have enough seats.
Final question. Are you able to get your message out to people who may affect some policy? I know the answer is yes, but what I'm saying is like, what are the chances that you could get hold of some folks or get an audience with some folks that had some power that could affect some policy and that they would listen instead of just going full sort of partisan political, you know, teachers unions. Are you getting any traction?
Yeah, I've had a conversation with Rand Paul on my podcast a couple months ago. He released the School Act, which was a restructuring of virtually all federal education dollars and reallocating it from buildings to individual students if they want to choose an alternative for their child. So that would have been great. But the problem is with Congress, we have a split Congress that's Probably not going to pass school choice legislation anytime soon. So it really needs to...
Because they love the brown kids. Because they, they love the brown babies so much.
I think 2021 may be the year for school choice, though, at the state legislatures. I mean, the elections went pretty well in terms of people who favor school choice in different states. Last month, Ohio expanded their private school voucher program by 25%, and I feel like there's going to be some more expansion at the state level. For example, New Hampshire now has a friendly environment for private school choice as well.
Well, a positive note to go out on, and thank you for doing the Lord's work, Corey DeAngelis. The book, School Choice Myths, it's available now on Amazon. Thanks for telling us everything anyone would need to know about this subject. And if people are listening and know somebody who may not be schooled up, pardon the pun, because I think a lot of the problem is people just don't know. And they don't know and they don't care and they don't care to know. Like it's just the money, with taking money away from the schools. And that's why they just blindly, idiotically go that way. They're not really using their deductive reasoning. Like why? What would be bad? When is choice ever bad? And don't you love choice in every other subject? So why are you fiddling with the kids' future? So take this and share it with one of those people, please. Corey DeAngelis, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Keep us updated. All right. Last but not least, Madison Reed. Well, Madison Reed started out. They started making great products for women. And after a little while, they said, well, why don't we do Madison Reed Mister? It's gray blending, natural looking color for your hair and beard. You can see the before and after shots online. They look great. No shoe polish look. Maybe just want a little more pepper and a little less salt. Madison Reed Mister makes it easy to find the color match you want. You go to the website. You get the kit. I've used it. Very natural, very easy. You just apply the color gel. Make sure you got the right color matched up. Go online. And then the activator, let it sit for 10 minutes. Rinse it out. And Bob's your uncle. They'll deliver the kit straight to your door. It's Madison Reed Mister. Right, Dawson?
Go to MadisonReedMister.com. That's MadisonReedMR.com. And use code ADAM10 for 10%. Off plus free shipping on your first box. Again, that's code ADAM10.
All right, we're doing your live Q&A on the Stereo app, which will be coming up next. Well, do you rent your home? Do you own your home? Well, I bet you do one of those things. That's where Geico comes in. Yeah, own a home can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. It's Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around the house. Save money. Go to geico.com. Get a quote. See just how much you could save today at Geico. That's geico.com.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.